Welcome to the Firehouse Strength and Conditioning Podcast, where we discuss strength and conditioning and its place in the fire service. I'm Eric Haskins, and I'm a professional firefighter and strength and conditioning coach. Enjoy the show. On today's episode, I speak to Jesse Clark of the Boise Fire Department. He has a passion for fitness and firefighter wellness and is currently a senior firefighter paramedic and fitness lead for the BFD. As someone who has been a first responder for the past 17 years and was directly involved in one of Boise Fire's most tragic incidents, he understands the need to fortify yourself to withstand the worst and have mechanisms in place when it becomes too much. In this episode, we discuss his involvement in developing the Forging Wellness Optimizing Resiliency Fire Conference, hosted by the Boise Fire Department. The class that he'll be presenting is called The Fitness Key, Opening the Door to Overall Wellness, and discusses the latest data on optimizing resiliency, fitness, and long-term wellness for firefighters. We dive into some key takeaways and things that he learned while creating his presentation, as well as cover topics like program design, the benefits of crew workouts, and the power of physical fitness and building resilient first responders. And now for the show. All right, Jesse Clark, welcome to the Firehouse Strength and Conditioning Podcast. This is the place where we talk if strength and conditioning has a place in the fire service. So I think that's probably where we're just going to start with you, man, is, does strength and conditioning have a place in the fire service?
Yeah. I mean, I think to kick this off, the simple answer is yes, 100%. It has a place in the fire service, in more ways than just one. I think we're going to dive into all of that today. I think where my focus is for it right now, and where I'm really hard charging is for our upcoming conference that we have, put on by Boise Fire for the Treasure Valley as a whole. And really this is going to, we want this to grow into a national conference, but with the help of Ashley Rowe's mom and our leaders from Boise Fire Department, we've developed Forging Wellness, which is going to be our health and safety conference. And each year it's going to be subtitled something different. But this year it's on optimizing resiliency. And I threw my name in the hat to present for this, as I've always had a strong background with fitness. And how that really ties into me with resiliency is what I've dealt with through my career as a first responder, not just as a firefighter, but as a first responder. And fitness truly has been the one thing that has kept me level through all of this. I think fitness as a whole rounds you out to be just the best all-around firefighter that you can be, due to making you fit for duty, both mentally and physically. So to talk about my presentation a little bit that's coming up.
Yeah, so let's kind of recap. So you are, along with Ashley Rosenbaum, heading up a new conference, kind of being put on, hosted by the Boise Fire Department, and that is called Forging Wellness.
Yes.
And what are the dates of that? That's coming up soon.
Yep. April 13th and 14th.
Okay. And this will be the kind of first year of doing that. This is different. Now, every year Boise Fire does the Boise Fire Symposium.
Yep.
And this is something different.
Totally separate.
Awesome. And you are presenting in the kind of inaugural conference this year.
Yep.
So yeah, let's go ahead and dive in. Tell us a little bit more about what you're presenting on, and
yeah,
and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So for me specifically, what I'm presenting on, my presentation's titled The Fitness Key, Opening the Door to Overall Wellness. Really what that means to me is basically creating, using that keyword resiliency in a firefighter. And as I was researching this and digging into a lot of data that I pulled for this presentation, I came across a really good definition of resilience. I think a lot of times when we talk about the word resiliency, we talk about, or we think about like elasticity, being able to bounce back from things.
Well, and I'm going to be honest, man, resiliency, just like fitness and, you could probably list any like fitness buzzword out there. Like resiliency right now is a huge buzzword. Yeah. Give us a definition.
Yeah.
What do you got?
And it's funny. We talk about this a lot with buzzwords, and maybe they get overused at times. But something that I even said in my very first fire interview is pretty simple, in the fact that a word becomes as strong as it is because it means something, right?
Sure. Are you talking about integrity?
I am talking about man. Integrity.
That's the go-to.
It becomes a really solid answer if you stand behind it, right?
And sure.
It has meaning to you personally. But this definition for resiliency that I found, it's the ability to adapt to a changing environment and then being able to withstand and overcome or bounce back from a disaster, whether natural, human, doesn't matter, any type of disaster, right? So how that frames it for me in my head is resiliency isn't just a matter of being elastic. It's a matter of withstanding as well. So being strong, so standing up to those things that you can for whatever reasons that you've built up those tools to be able to withstand, stand strong in the face of certain things.
Sure.
But then when you do encounter that one thing that just blasts you in the stomach and knocks the wind out of you, you are able to get back up and go again and recover from that. And to me, that's really where resiliency stands, is knowing when you can stand strong on things and knowing when to bounce back and having the tools in your back pocket to be able to do that, right? And then not having it be a focus that everything we deal with in the fire service is so glum, because it's not. I mean, we have a great fucking job. I mean, it's awesome. We love what we do. And I think there's times where we can get a little down when we talk about some of these bad things that have happened to us or these things that we've seen. But in reality, some of these things we deal with, and it's totally fine, right? Because we've built up these safeguards, essentially, to keep us grounded. But then we do have those times where we get blasted and we have to figure out a way to come back from that. And really, Ashley Rosenbaum put that in a really good way. And she really, this concept is stolen from her, which she stole from somebody else, that really it's just not a matter of that we have to always focus on it being so bad. We have it great, right?
Yeah.
But then to push this towards the fitness side, right, on resiliency, this came from joining the peer support team and trying to figure out how to come up with just a 3-in-1 training for our department. And then it grew into this conference as well and presenting for this conference. So I dug in. I found this really cool study that was centered on firefighters and resiliency in firefighters. And it came up with 6 domains for firefighter resiliency. And those 6 domains were physical health, physical fitness, mental health, job-related competency, lifestyle, and demographic status. Now, there's definitions for all of those that they have in this study, but I think it's pretty easy to separate the difference between some of those. Physical health being those chronic and acute illnesses, injuries, physical fitness having to do everything with muscular strength, endurance, aerobic capacity, mental health having to do with PTSD, anxiety, depression, lifestyle choices being eating habits, alcohol, drug addiction, sleep habits. That's a big one. And then job-related competency is really, man, that's a very big encompassing domain for this because it really relates to workability in the fire service. What what allows you to stay on the job with job related competency. And of course, there's a ton of things that go into it, experience, time and grade on certain things, the amount of effort that you put into certain things that you do when you're training to be a firefighter. And then that final domain, demographic status, that one, it really, it's centered around age, marital status, education level. And that one, for this presentation, I kind of throw aside because there's not much I can do to change that.
Okay.
Right? Like, okay. I mean, fitness, where this goes is fitness has a direct impact on 4 out of 5 of those domains. Demographic status, unfortunately, is what it is. I can't change where you were born,
sure,
who you married.
They're non-modifiable factors.
Yeah.
Yep. This is the one instance that you can blame your parents.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I love it. As long as there's that out for something.
Yeah.
That's cool. Right.
Yep.
Sounds like a good study. I think I'll try to get that from you to put in the show notes.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in it, they can take a look. But out of that study, so you say that had a huge impact on, you know, kind of what you're doing. What were some of the biggest takeaways from that study?
Yeah. So with each of those domains came another study, right? Each one of them led down its own rabbit hole. But with physical fitness, as you look into it, and the cool thing about how fitness works to change the mind and change the body, of course, there's some science behind it, right? We have, when we work out, it releases myokines, which then are basically signals throughout the rest of the body. Some of those most important ones go into things such as like insulin glucose regulation, on how it's regulated throughout the body, whether it's regulated in the muscles or whether it's regulated in the pancreas and so on and so forth. And then those transmitters also in turn, right, that directly deals with the physical health side, right? And that's only one aspect, but really touching on obesity and diabetes, two huge things right there that we deal with physical health wise. But then when we dive into the mental health side, those myokines then trigger things in our mind as well, or in our brain, that are going to stimulate neurotrophic factors that then, man, they do so much. And I don't have all my notes here in front of me to dive into that super heavy, but the number one thing. So if we look at anxiety and depression alone, those are the worldwide leading cost to the healthcare system as far as when it comes to mental health, anxiety and depression. And how that affects firefighters is firefighters are 2 times as likely to experience anxiety versus the general population, and 3 times as likely to encounter depression than the general public. And the study that builds onto mental health just came out, right? We talked about this not too long ago, but came out of Australia, that physical fitness is found to be 1.5 times better treatment than counseling, medication, when it comes to mental health. Right. And so they did that study focusing on anxiety, depression, and psychological distress, because this obviously occurred after COVID, which created a 35% to 38% increase in psychological distress for the world population. But what they found with that was incredibly interesting, that with fitness, the best way they described it is there's so much impact. You can't take all the benefits that fitness gives you for mental health and squeeze it into a pill, right? And you can't have the same benefits in a shorter amount of time with anything else that you can with fitness. So they found that in less than 12 weeks, you can have a positive outcome with mental health in multiple facets, not just one, when it comes to mental health, correlated through fitness.
So I love this study, and it kind of sent me on a, like on a rabbit hole, but, and we were talking about it when, after we read it, but, you know, it's pretty common. I know in my department, we've got, you know, EAP. And so, you know, if we experience a traumatic event, you know, we're qualified for, you know, 6 to 10 sessions with a counselor. Right. And so, then you've got the medication side of things that, can be very helpful, for people. But what this study is showing is that there's kind of like a third leg to this. Right.
Yeah.
And so after reading the study and talking to you, the crazy idea was like, well, if we want to take this holistic approach, and so, you know, we know the benefits of physical fitness, and you know, I wouldn't argue it's like that replaces the counseling or the medication, right. But like, why don't we add that to the mix where it's like, all right, you're, you know, after a traumatic event, you qualify for, you know, 10 sessions with your counselor, and, you know, maybe medication is a good option for you or not, you know, I don't know. But then why don't we throw in 10 sessions with a personal trainer? Yeah. Because now like the data is showing 1.5 times greater successful outcomes. Yeah. Right. And so
at least a consideration, right?
Right.
I mean,
like, I'm kind of on this idea, and I'm throwing it around with, you know, I've brought it to the table and talked to some union leadership, and it's like, why don't we start incorporating, well, let's do 10 sessions per traumatic event with a personal trainer. And so, you know, whether that personal trainer is, you know, whoever that is, but I know, you know, my department has peer fitness trainers, your department has, you know, a select group, right? That is kind of dedicated that are available for something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That.
And we're working back into that. That's a whole different topic. Sure. For another day, but
sure.
That's something that we've bounced around with. And now we're starting to realize the importance of having those directly involved within our department.
Well, there's a lot of departments that are utilizing peer fitness trainers, mm-hmm. or they have them and they're being underutilized or not utilized at all.
Right.
And so, you know, this I think is a great option of going, hey, we've got these members that are passionate that want to work with our people. So let's start doing this 10 sessions of personal training.
Yeah.
In coordination with, you know, we added in with their counseling, and then maybe or maybe not they're using medication. Now we've got a holistic approach to, you know, battling mental health issues, and we set them up for success, right?
Yeah. And I think what's cool about that, what we found in that study, I say what we found in it, like I was part of it. But I mean, I've read through this study probably at least 12 times by now, but I think what's really cool about it is if we were to incorporate that, it's so easy to start that, right? You have something that happens on duty and you sign up for EAP. Well, that's going to take a little bit of time to get into a counselor and get seen. And then you maybe go to a session, you talk for a little bit, and then they say, hey, we'd, you know, like to see you back in a week, 2 weeks, whatever that looks like. Maybe they don't even prescribe something right off the get-go because they just want to get to know a little bit more about what's going on. And you only get blocked an hour session of time to sit down and talk about stuff. But then when you finally get to the point where they're going to prescribe you some medications, you have to go get that. And then you trial that medication for 4 weeks before you come back and tell them if it's effective or not, or if you're having adverse side effects with it. Well, by now, we could at least be halfway done with that fitness program that we already talked about. You could be 5 sessions in at least, and we only need to complete out those last 5 sessions to get close to that 12 weeks, which is where their cutoff was, that you don't need to go beyond that to see positive benefits for this. So maybe if we start that physical fitness side prior to everything else, you get to the point where they're talking about medication, you're like, I'm good. I think I've worked through some of this.
Right. Like we've totally worked through or now started pushing the ball forward in a way that instead of waiting for medication to begin working,
yeah,
now we've possibly eliminated, you know, that is like, you know what, I don't need to add more pills to this, right?
Right.
That's awesome.
And I think to, you know, take that a step further, what's something that I find cool about what I've done with my presentation is not only have I done the research with these studies and dug into them, but then what I'm taking out of them is best practice. So for each one of those domains, I take that best practice a little bit further. So even just like with that physical health side, the World Health Organization recommends certain number of hours in a week that you get done. What that equates to in pretty easy terms is 4 to 5 days a week at 30 to 60 minutes within that 4 to 5 days at moderate to high intensity. And then 1 to 2 days of active recovery. And then on the physical health side to help avoid some of the fitness injuries that we might incur because they're inevitable, we have design programming, right, that helps reduce that chance because we have well thought out programming with video demonstrations that are going to curb some of those things when maybe somebody doesn't recognize a movement that they haven't seen in a while.
So did you say World Health Organization mm-hmm. recommended a program
mm-hmm.
4 to 5 times a week of moderate to high intensity
yeah.
with 2 days of active recovery built into that?
Yeah.
And then having a design program for that?
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea. I might steal that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's crazy, the correlation there. You know, and it's funny because when they word it, they don't directly say some of those things. Like you have to dig in and do the math for some of the hour time frames that they create. But that best practice that I laid out falls right within their range of what they're looking for. And it is, they say moderate to high intensity and the active recovery to help flush out the system, give you a chance for your body to recover and, you know, get back what it needs and then do it again. You know, and, you know, touching on that injury side a little bit is, it's interesting because studies show you are somebody who doesn't work out and even if you work out just while you're on duty, you reduce your chance of occupational injury by 2.2 times. On the flip side, just to be fair, right, when we're reading through this data, it does show that people that work out have 2 times as likely risk for a fitness injury. But how would we avoid that? We have design programming, exactly like I was talking about. Plus, incorporating what we were talking about a little bit earlier, peer fitness trainers that are there to help answer questions, help work through training days on certain things. So that's what's cool about this presentation. So each step of this, as we talk through the data, we're also telling you how to put it into practice.
So you've got a presentation or a class. I believe this is happening day one, right?
It is day one. So you're
opening up with this class. You're going through these 6 domains. You're presenting scientific data with proven best practices to incorporate it.
Yep.
All right. So I'd still like people to attend your class.
Yeah.
So what are some like key takeaways? So you talked about like,
there's a lot like, more in like, the class. Like, so.
Sure. So you talked about kind of frequency and intensity, right? What are some other like key takeaways or tools that maybe you came across while creating this class? Or anything that you could kind of like share with us that we'd have like takeaways to walk away from?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing specifically for firefighters, right, is how this relates to job-related competency. So how does fitness actually make us better at what we do? of course, there's things to show like, hey, you're stronger, you're going to be able to pull somebody out maybe a little bit easier, or you're going to be able to drag hose a little bit farther than the person next to you. Sure. But what's really cool, if you take that training and then if you simply add something that is somewhat in the realm of what you do on the fire ground, that translates so closely that, so there's three studies specifically related to job-related competency for firefighters when correlated with fitness, that if you were to take an extra amount of time, so this is what my presentation was for my admin, was if we devoted an hour every single day in Recruit Academy to fitness, we could worry less about whether we were losing out on job-related tasks or abilities because we're making up for them by just having this job-related competency in our fitness. So I think what's really cool is just taking that opportunity within those 4 to 5 days of moderate to high-intensity workouts, make it somewhat relatable to the fire ground.
Sure. Know,
whether that's climbing some stairs and doing it with your crew. So the other cool takeaway that I found was they did a study with kids on when they're growing up, when it relates to their growth and development in early childhood, dynamic things that we do. So they specifically related it to like basketball, football, you know, all recess activities that you're just doing. It's such a dynamic impact or activity that you're doing that there's so many other factors that you get out of it than just what you do in the gym. Obviously, that can't take away what we do in the gym because there's things in the gym that we have to focus on to be able to build specific strength. But what we don't get in the gym is you are running through a parking lot, pulling something, and your foot steps on a rock or a crack, right? Which isn't going to, like, I'm not worried about you rolling your ankle, but you still have to engage different stabilizer muscles.
Sure.
To, I mean, adjust for that, right? So overall, it creates this a lot more dynamic impact on that individual when you're doing stuff that's job relatable, doing stuff with your crew. Plus, that just obviously brings your crew closer together.
Yeah, and I like that because it's kind of touching on the intangibles, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, something I always found beneficial with the crew workouts is it's such an educational thing, like especially if you're working with a new crew. You know, for the people that have been working with the same crew and they get this sense of they know everything about each other. Right. They know how they carry themselves on the fire ground. They know what they're going to do and where they're going to be. Well, you know, doing these crew workouts offer those opportunities to start like building that, you know, maybe it, you know, it's the encyclopedia or what you know about your crew.
Yeah.
So if you're on my crew and I'm working out with you or we're doing some training, I can start paying attention to how you carry yourself when you get fatigued.
Right.
Right. What does it look like looking through your mask, like starting to identify what your eyes look like when you're like super fatigued. Right. And we can find that stuff out. You know, unfortunately we don't get enough work. Like we don't get enough fires where we can just rely on like, oh yeah, like I see this a couple times every shift and I know what he looks like when he's tired. No, but we can manufacture those training experiences in our daily workouts and those things where it's like, no, I know how Jesse carries himself
right.
when he is starting to fatigue. And then that translates to now I spot it on the fire ground and I know that like, hey, we're either nearing the end of it or I need to check in with him and just make sure. So now like that information or that intel that we got from training as a crew, not only did it increase our morale, right? Like, and we're talking about the physical and the mental benefits of it, but now we're getting this important intel of going, you know, valuable things that are going to keep each other like safe on the fire ground. Right.
Yeah. And I like what you said too, about whether we might have to pull out or at least check in, right? Like, how many times have you been, well, let's go to our buddy Frank, right? Like, we're doing a workout, and next thing you know, he's chirping in your ear to work a little bit harder or push a little bit harder, and you realize that you do have that in you, right? And not so much that on the fire ground to like push that to an unsafe level by any means, but just in a simple fact, like, hey, I see you're starting to fatigue. Hey, give me 2 more minutes of hard work. And sure, what I need you to do is keep your overall focus, right? So as for me personally, as I've started to work towards that company officer level, working with my crew to be able to see that, to then, hey, we make a push up a flight of stairs. At the top of the stairs, all of a sudden, I see my guy start to fatigue. Well, where does his focus go? Well, it's not on the things that it normally would be, right? But if I take a second to simply bump him and be like, hey, we're at the top of the stairs, take a breath, take a look around, right?
Right.
Because there's one thing, you make that top of the stairs and you're still flowing water. He's still hitting the seat of the fire, but he's probably got his head down, right? Which, that's a huge thing where me just bumping him, he's going to be like, oh yeah. And then he starts taking a look around.
Yep. Re-engages, maybe holds on, gives you exactly what you need. Or you can just say, hey man, there's a light at the end of this tunnel. We just need to make this push and we're there, buddy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And those are things that you can now identify because of the hours and the things that you've put in, you know, on the training ground or it's in the gym. And so, you know, kind of going back to what you were talking about with, you know, the importance of job relevance, right? And so the way I kind of look at that, and a while ago I created this, I want to say it was like the, you know, the tactical performance pyramid. And you know, it's heavily influenced from Louis Simmons and some work Buddy Gus did, but really at the base of this pyramid is your GPP, right? Your general physical preparedness. And that's the stuff we build up like in the gym, right?
Right.
Isolated, safe environment, controlled movements. I've got a barbell in my hand. Right. Like, these are linear movement patterns, right? But we can isolate certain like physical qualities in the gym and address weaknesses, right? And then, you know, as we move up the pyramid, then we're going into, you know, SPP, right? Specialized physical preparedness. And this, you know, as far as I look at it, now we're starting to veer more towards like job, like specificity.
Absolutely.
Right. And so really I look at this as, you know, doing workouts in gear. And like you had mentioned, it's that step towards, like, it looks a little bit more like what we do on the fire ground than what we do in the gym, right? And that's really the bridge between what we do in the gym to our like fire ground performance when it comes to like getting the job done and what we're actually training for. Yeah. So that SPP component is vital and plays a key role in bridging the gap between what we do in the gym to our overall like success or failures on the fire ground, which would be our tactical fire ground performance.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but my experience has been that if I engage my crew in something like that, which I don't do it every day because I get there's everybody is operating a little bit differently. Right. And so there's times where people are going to need something different that day. And so I'm not somebody who requires my crew to do a crew workout every single day with me. But the times that we talk about it and we get out and do a crew workout together, not only do we get everything that we just talked about, but usually something sparks out of that, right? Usually it's like, I wonder if I could force a door right now. You know, so then we take that and we move it to a training prop or something that we have at the station and explore that a little bit further, right? Which just, once again, it just opens the door.
Yeah, and, you know, when I think about, like, morale, right? Like, there's no better place or no better time in a firehouse than on the ride back or when you get back to the fire station after like a good worker.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
And like people are alive. Like, I mean, man, that like that morale will carry for a while.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like, and we shouldn't manufacture those experiences. Right. I believe that is against the law. right? but what we can do, and where I see a similar like morale, is after these crew workouts.
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
Where we go through that shared, you know, whether you want to call it shared suffering, or you know, achieving, you know, a common goal between us. I always see very similar morale like afterwards, yeah. right? Like sitting there, everyone is like sweaty, recovering, but then you're joking around, listening to music, you know, whatever it is. But it reminds me a lot of post-fire,
yeah.
back to firehouse or on our way back from the rig. And the difference being is like, well, we have the opportunity to manufacture that.
Yes.
Every shift
yeah.
and every day by doing something with our crew. And like that is in our control.
100%.
And if knowing, you know, the benefits of that and we're in charge of that, you know, you're going into a company officer role, like it seems like that'd be a pretty important thing to make sure we get done every day.
Yeah. I think it takes you back to that camaraderie that you get in Recruit Academy as well. Right. I mean, like shared suffering. I don't know if that's necessarily, yeah, it's hard work, but it's just shared hard work, man. It's, yeah. it's, hey, we're out here busting our asses together and having fun while doing it. And it's that funny thing that everybody talks about. Never, never does anybody ever regret when they're done with a workout. It's always that first part of getting started. But once you get it done, there is never anybody who's like, gosh, I wish I wouldn't have done that today. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. so that just now that becomes a shared experience for everybody. Right?
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. Anything else? I kind of want to talk a little bit more about your conference. Anything else as far as your class goes? It's right out of the gates.
Yeah, it's right out of the gates. I follow Sean Steer, the keynote speaker, which I'm really excited to have him there and share his story with us. But with my presentation, I mean, it's a lot of data with then how to put it into practice.
Awesome.
And I'm excited to share that with people because it's not just data, right? Like that's one of the big things that I've been working on as we look to grow this conference every year is bringing in people that are going to give us practical applications for the data, not just data and then nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And I've always hated that. Not sure if you know who Dan John is.
I don't.
All right. So he writes some of my favorite books on fitness and health and life. Dan John, two first names, look it up. But he's got this kind of like, I don't know, term or something, but he's always interested in the like the now what. And I've taken this mindset into a lot of the classes that I've attended and conferences and so on. And so many classes present all this data and they give you all this information. And I'm always left like kind of on the edge of going, well now what? Right.
Right.
Like now what do I do with all that information? And so I'm pretty excited about your class and the rest of the stuff that's going on because I'm a data nerd and I want to know the why, but I also want to know like now what? Like now what do I do with it?
Yeah,
and I absolutely. Need it to be practical. I need it to be something that I put into like that is simple that like when I walk away from your class,
yeah,
it's like I can start doing this tomorrow to start like moving the needle, right?
Yeah, and I think everybody that we have coming for this year it is going to give something to follow, right? So they're going to give some data. They're going to have something that the now what? They're going to be like, this is what we found, but this is actually how we put it into practice and how we do what we're talking about. From a very easy, practical sense too, not something super complicated. My favorite analogy for this. So lately I've been working with a PhD out of Arizona, Dr. Jeff Burgess, and he's done so many cool studies, but just chatting with him, him and his partner, John Galata, down at Tucson Fire, have really done this and put this into practice for Tucson Fire and some of the surrounding departments down there. And his focus has been cancer research for firefighters, right? And one of his first things that he said to me was, yeah, I'm going to, not only am I going to come up and I'm going to show you the statistics and whatnot, because that's what I have and that's what I've studied. So it's important, but then how do you put it into practice? And the first thing that pops into people's heads is like, well, clean cab. Well, we've tried that. That doesn't work. And he was the first one to say that, right? Like, yeah, clean cab is great in theory, but we've got a bunch of different other options to start you out that are going to be a lot easier for a department to swallow than like a huge turnaround such as clean cab.
Man, with the clean cab, you probably just lost. Well, I don't know. I don't know if, yeah, I'm going to leave that one alone. But anyways,
I mean, like I said, it's a great theory. And I mean, we have several clean cabs in our department, and there's pros and cons, and we've seen that on both sides, but the reality is it's not practical to put that through our entire fleet.
Well, it's funny. I'm reading a book right now. It's called the Comfort Crisis.
Yeah. By Michael Easter.
Yeah.
It's great. He's from this area.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. And just the part that I was listening today, it was talking about cancer and the NIH and these companies looking in and like being the number one thing with like risk of cancer was whether, you know, you were at a healthy weight,
right,
or not. Yeah. So, you know, and I don't want to, you know, just go after obesity. I think it's more complicated. I think there's a lot of factors to it, especially in our job. But, you know, something as simple as going after the things that we're eating and some lifestyle changes. I mean, if we want to go after cancer, there's a lot of ways to do it.
There is a lot there's facets a lot of ways. To fighting cancer. And some of this presentation that I have comes from a lot of what Michael Easter talked about in his Comfort Crisis as well. I even dive into what he presented from Rachel Halford on the 25-3 rule.
Yeah.
On just like getting outdoors as well, like how simple that is. And so to obviously build on the fitness aspect, just taking your workout outside.
Sure.
Right. Simple things that we can use. But yeah, going back to the cancer side, man, there is so much, like you said, just with obesity and with these other things that already put firefighters at a greater risk, because out of 28 occupations, firefighters or public service, I guess is how they categorized it in this study, are at the highest risk for obesity out of 28 different high-risk occupations. So, I mean, the reality is we're not attacking it. It's statistics, right? It's right. Numbers that actually exist. And we need to change that, because obesity, as if you were to put that into a bottle, right? That is the one thing that spurs all these other things, right? It is the leading factor into cardiovascular function. It's the leading factor into diabetes. They all go hand in hand, and it all centers around obesity.
Yeah, that's a big one to go after.
It is.
No pun intended. But as we kind of wrap on this, we've talked about your class. I'm super excited. I'll be there for it. what about any other classes? Can you kind of give us an overview of who else is going to be there? What else is going to be presented on?
Yeah, absolutely. So conference, we partnered with Molly Jones, who's out of IAFF Center of Excellence. So she's come and presented to our peer support team a number of times, and we've always enjoyed her when she comes out. She does a lot of really good webinars and posts them all to the IAAF website. So if you haven't yet, definitely go check out the stuff that Molly Jones puts out. She's a big presenter in this. I think she has several. One of the main ones going to be on suicide. Another one on really the family dynamic. So spousal support. That's not what it's titled, but that's really, that's what a number of our people have been asking for a while, is spousal support. Because when that significant other isn't there, right, doesn't experience what we experience, even just the simple fact of the fact that we work together with other people for 48 hours at a time, they don't understand some of those same things. And so this is just something to sit down, and spouses are welcome to attend this as well. That'll be a really cool thing. We centered the, she's doing that class both days. The first day she's doing it in an evening, so that way the recruits that are going through academy right now have a chance to get to it after academy and bring their spouses down. And then she's also doing it again on day two. We're having one of our local doctor that is basically doing a unique technique for mental health and how to really dive into that. And well, it's basically utilizing ketamine. So we've got our local doctor who is doing that, who's coming to present on that. And then we've got another lady named Ari Brooks who's coming. And all of them, I've met them, and they're wonderful presenters, and they're going to have a lot of really good things to talk about. That's going to spark a lot of really good conversation and questions from people. And that's really what we're hoping to do, is just open up conversation about this stuff. I think that's when this got started in the fire service, just mental health or overall wellness, is just about having a conversation about it, right? Because the unfortunate reality is there's been a stigma around mental health or wellness for such a long time in first responders. And really all it takes is opening that door and having a conversation about it. Because we're all there at some level, and we can all bring something to the table.
And what I really like about this conference is, you know, you started talking about resiliency, right? And there is not only a mental side to it, but a physical side to it. And from what you're saying, this Forging Wellness Conference is going to be going after taking a holistic approach to resiliency, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what makes it unique as far as like the other offerings that I know that are out there.
Yeah.
What I'll be most interested in is the now what, you know, I'm looking for those things that, as I walk away, you know, I can start putting them into practice, just immediately. And this is a 2-day conference. Is that
2-day conference this year? Like I said, this is something we have a high enough demand in this area that this is something that we want to happen year after year. And so, starting this year after this conference, we're going out and we're networking, meeting with some of the other people that are doing health and safety conferences throughout the nation, and seeing like what we need to bring in, because honestly, our area, man, we've got a lot of departments in a small footprint, that honestly, in our Southwest Idaho area, we're isolated from a lot of places, but we still have a good amount of really motivated firefighters in a small footprint. And we want to bring that, and we want to have all of our departments in the Valley just excel in every way possible, right? It's all of this plays into being good on the fire ground.
Sure. So remind me, what are the dates again?
April 13th and 14th.
Okay, so that's coming right up. And then what about cost?
How much does this cost? It's free.
Whoa. Free?
Yes.
Free. Nothing's free in this world, man.
It's free. The only thing, so we, you got to go to the Eventbrite page.
Okay.
And pre-register just so that we have an accurate count on numbers. And really moving forward too, that's where we want to keep it. We're not looking as this at a moneymaker type of conference. We want to get the information out to people. We want people to be successful. We want people to have long, healthy careers, retire, and spend the rest of the years with their family, right? Like that's what we want to create.
Cool. That can you get me that link, and then I'll post it in our show notes. So hopefully Jesse will I know he will. He'll give me a link in our show notes. We'll have a link to that study with the six domains. And so you can dive into that to learn more. I would, if you're anything like me, maybe just attend the class. You'll save yourself some reading. And then we'll also put in the pre-registration link. So April 13th and 14th, if you're interested in attending, no cost, just sign up.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep. For any first responders in the area, spouses as well. Like I said, the spouses will definitely benefit more from Molly Jones sessions on spousal support. But I think anybody can gain benefit from any part of this.
So. Does Molly talk about how we say, you know, as firefighters, whatever, first responders, how we can support our spouses?
She does. Okay. Yep. So it's not just about our spouses supporting us, because they do that enough, right?
Yeah. That's super important. I know in my household, it's like I leave for 2 days and my wife's at home with the two kids when work and things are piling up. And so she's very much on shift as well, just at a very different thing. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Molly's going to attack that as well.
Yeah. She dives in from all angles, and it is, like I said, she's got a ton of valuable information that just, I mean, it definitely resonates very clearly and does it in just a very simple way.
Awesome. So. Awesome. Jesse, I think we're going to wrap it there. Thanks for coming on. We got some good information here. I'll post those links in that study. And we'll probably be having you on again here soon.
Okay, yeah, I hope so, man. I think, obviously, there's a lot on the table here that we can still talk about.
For sure. All right, man. Thanks again.
Thank you.